Once more under the breach, dear friends. I'll fill the vault up with our very echoey English dead. And you're tuned in again to The Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff McClure. Jake is out due to an unforeseen event that occurred yesterday in his life, and he hopefully will be back next week in flying colors, and I'll be here too. This is Jeff McClure. And the telephone number in here is 254-773-1400 if you have any comments, thoughts, or observations about anything to do with the economy or stocks or investments or anything of that ilk. There's a couple of things I want to talk about this hour. We're talking about a lot of the complexity that goes into why stocks are going down while earnings are going up. And one of the important things to remember about the stock market, it is not priced on what happened last quarter. It is not priced, except sometimes by amateurs, it is not priced on what happened over the last year. It is priced based on what the participants in the market expect over the following year, sometimes even longer. So it's the future that determines the price of stocks, which is perfectly rational. If you were going to buy a rental property, you don't buy a rental property, well, you shouldn't, based on the rental income from the last year. You should buy a rental property based on your potential rental income from the coming year and your potential financials for the company. If you're going to buy a rental property and you're going to hold it for, let's say, 5 years, you want to take a look at the five-year potential income from the property and determine if it's good or if it's bad. In other words, if I'm going to pay, let's keep the numbers very, very simple. If I'm going to pay $100 for a piece of property, and I realize that 100 is an absurdly low number, but it's one that we can figure on very easily. If I'm going to pay $100 for a piece of rental property, and my expenses to maintain that piece of rental property and keep it functional and so on are going to be $10 a year on that $100, but the rental income is going to be $14 a year, then I have a 4% return on investment. And right now, 4% return on investment is not good enough for real estate, so I wouldn't want to pay that much for that. I would lower the price on the real estate. I would not pay that much for it. As a matter of fact, there's a good rule of thumb set by Trammell Crow many, many years ago that still applies today, and that is a 10% return on investment on real estate is a good number if you have good diversification. Why a full 10%? Well, you never know when people are not going to rent. You never know when somebody's going to trash an apartment. You never know when the local economy is going to suddenly turn around and go south on you with no warning. So having a 10% return on capital or a 10% return on investment on rental property is a good number. A lot of people buy it with a lower return, but that is still a good number, and because there's a lot of risk involved in a rental property. If there were no risk involved, then your 10-year number, represented by the U.S. Treasury 10-year note, which has no what we call financial risk. In other words, there's a risk that inflation will run up higher than 3%, in which case you'll get back less buying power than you put into it. But the risk of the United States not paying off, not paying you back, let's say you put $10,000 in Treasury notes, that are 10-year Treasury notes, and you buy them straight from the Treasury, and the chances of them not paying you back in 10 years are effectively zero, because the United States, the existence of the United States with its military and everything else, is predicated on its ability to maintain a stable value of its currency, a stable value of its debt. Now, by the way, the real interest rate, just a little side note here, the real interest rate on that 10-year, if it's trading just over 3% right now, is really somewhere between 0.5% and 1%, because inflation, the Federal Reserve has targeted a 2% inflation rate. And if the Federal Reserve is exactly right and they get a 2% inflation rate, then if you loan money to the Treasury at 3% right now for 10 years, then 10 years from now you will calculate it all out and you get a real return of 1%. Which doesn't sound like much, but how much risk were you taking? The answer is you weren't taking any risk. And if the Federal Reserve doesn't quite keep up with it and it winds up being 2.5% inflation over that period of time, then you only got 0.5% return, which is why I mentioned interest rates tend to rise when inflationary events occur. And borrowing a lot of money, by the way, is an inflationary event, which is what the federal government is doing. So let's go back. Let's go over to debt for just a second. By the way, the telephone number in here remains. This is KTEM, Personal Wealth Coach. Telephone number remains in here, 254-773-1400, if you want to call in and comment on this information. Debt falls in, and I mentioned this last week, but I think it's worth reviewing again. Debt falls into two general categories. And we're talking about longer-term debt. We're not talking about short-term debt. What I mean by short-term debt, if you use your credit card to buy gasoline or you use your credit card to go out to eat, which I routinely do, but you pay it off every month, that's called short-term debt. It's equivalent of cash. As a matter of fact, most credit cards, if you pay off the whole balance every week or every month, rather, you pay no interest on it. That's the equivalent of the federal interbank rate, the rate that the Federal Reserve controls. Now, why do credit card companies willingly loan you money for a month and charge you no interest? Because they're hoping you won't pay it back. They're hoping that you'll stumble at some point and you will leave it there for the 18 or 14 or 9 or 10% or 27%. I saw one credit card at 29% kick in, and that's where they make their money. And they depend on the fact that a certain number of people do that. If you don't do it, you're great, but you're running along taking a risk. And if the risk is acceptable, then in its convenience right now. The credit card companies also get about 1.5% or 2% on every transaction that you run through your credit card. So they're making money either way, which is why Visa and MasterCard tend to be money-making operations. So, now we got all over that. Debt. There's two kinds of debt, basically, other than the short-term rollover debt. And those two kinds of debt are capital debt and consumer debt. Consumer debt, long-term, needs to be looked at very, very hard to see if it really is capital debt or not. Because if it's just consumer debt over the long-term, it's what we call bad debt. If it's capital debt, it's what we call good debt. And why is it good debt? Let's just say, let me give you an example that fits into your personal life. Let's just say that you have a car that's breaking down frequently. You have a car that is costing you a lot of money to fix. It's spending a lot of time in the shop getting fixed so that you either have to rent a car or you can't get to work. Buying a new car or buying a nearly new car, which is probably better economically, is an excellent move at that point. And further, borrowing the money to do so is an excellent move. Why? Let's just say, and I think that's a pretty fair number here. Let's just say you keep a car for 5 years once you buy it. You're going to use it over a five-year period. And let's just say that inflation is 2.5% over that five-year period. If you pay for it today, you are paying for a lot more car than you got. Why? Because you're going to use the value of that car to you, of that automobile to you, is its ability to get you to work so you can make a living, to get you around, and to some degree, and this is a value, this is a true value, to make you feel good about yourself and feel confident, and it makes you more productive. I mean, you need to use it to go get groceries, so you need that automobile. That automobile makes you more productive. It causes you to make money. Without the automobile, you don't make money. It's that simple. If you can't get to work, you don't make money. Therefore, buying a car is a capital investment. Now, this is interesting. Capital investments normally have low interest rates and a title. If you buy a piece of property, it's got a title. You buy a car, it's got a title. Now, there are exceptions to that, but in most cases, the collateral is the item that you purchased for the bank, the collateral from the bank that they can come and collect, and they're satisfied that if they pick up your car because you didn't make the payments, that they'll get more money back. They'll get their money back and maybe give you some of what's left over, or something pretty close to it. So that is a good investment. That is a crucial investment. Why should you borrow the money? Because if you're going to use the car over a five-year period, you should pay for it over a five-year period. It's kind of like if you were paying somebody to mow your lawn, paying them 5 years in advance, up front, the total price of mowing your lawn over a five-year period doesn't make any sense at all. Now, when is it a good idea to pay cash for a car? When you can get a major discount for doing so. That's called present value. In other words, if somebody said this car is $35,000 and if you'll pay cash, you can get it for $25,000, I'd probably jump on it. If they said it's $35,000 and you pay cash, it's $35,000. You borrow from us and we'll cut it to $32,000, I'd borrow the money in a heartbeat unless the interest rate was absurdly high. Why? Paying for the car during the 5 years while you're using it is good economics. You're not paying up front for something you haven't used yet. You're not, because effectively paying cash right now, let's just use the historic inflation rate in the United States. Paying cash right now is a 3% loan that you're making to pay for the car. That's strictly from inflation. From the perspective of what you could do with the money in the interim, it probably equates to something like a 6 or 10% loan. Why do I say that? And I'm not suggesting that you take your loan money or borrow money and invest it or something, but over the very long term, the Standard & Poor's 500 stock index has a inflation-adjusted return of about 7.5%, actually 7.42%. Throw in standard inflation over the long term, and I mean long term, and it goes up to 10%. So there is a place in the current economy where if you leave the money invested for a long period of time, historically you would have gotten a 10% return, which is, by the way, why the 10%, I mentioned earlier that real estate has a return on, if a good real estate investment has a return on investment after expenses of about 10%, before taxes, after expenses. For the same reason, around 10% is a good number. And it is why the stock market, the S&P 500 since 1871, has averaged about 10% a year pretty consistently over any 30-year period. That is, your guess as good as mine on that. But it does it, and it does it so consistently that there has to be something there. So if you go out and borrow the money to buy a car, and you leave your money used elsewhere, the rest of your money, you have more cash on hand. If you leave it in cash, you actually have more cash on hand to handle in case of an emergency. And there's a whole series of advantages. So if you're going to use a car for a five-year period, the best thing to do is to borrow it. If you have a income and you're employed and you buy a house and you intend to live there any reasonable length of time, a 30-year mortgage makes perfectly good sense. Why? Well, because that's the time period over which you use the house. Now, you may say, well, you know, 30 years, am I going to use a house for 30 years? Somebody is. And there's a very fundamental issue. That's why you depreciate commercial property over a 30-year period. If during that 30 years you don't do any improvements on the house, you don't do any, you don't fix the roof, you don't replace the water heaters, at the end of 30 years, the house will be worthless. And over a 30-year period, typically, this is not a guaranteed every time, but typically, over a 30-year period, you will spend the purchase price on maintenance on the house, which restores the purchase price again. So paying for it over a 30-year period makes perfectly good sense. You're going to use it over that time period. That's good debt. What's bad debt? Well, if you decide that you're going to go out to eat or you're going to buy a bunch of Christmas presents and you charge them all on your credit card, but you don't have the money to do anything other than minimum payments, and you feel good for a very short period of time, like over Christmas or while you're going out to eat or for a week, that's bad debt. Now, again, using your credit card to go out to eat and then paying it off every month, different issue altogether. That's a cash flow issue, and it has nothing to do with real debt. But if you're borrowing money for a short-term feel-good, then eventually you're going to wind up needing to see Ed Laughlin and learn about the various chapters of the bankruptcy code. So let's look at what's going on in the United States today. What's good debt? Well, during the recession, a lot of money was spent on stimulus, on highways. Matter of fact, some of the money that was borrowed during the recession is the reason that there's so much highway construction going on in the Temple area right now. It's a stimulus package. A lot of the money that's borrowed by the federal government is for good cause. It is capital investment. And you can generally tell when it's working. As we came out of the recession, as we went into 2016, for example, during 2016 and going into 2017, the federal debt as a percentage of gross domestic product was shrinking. What does that mean? Eventually, if you don't do anything, even with the relatively low GDP we were having, if you did nothing, sooner or later the debt would pay itself off. That means you're on an autopilot course in the right direction. Ideally, economists say, and it has been proven correct on many occasions, during the time of a booming economy, you raise taxes and you cut spending a little bit. Why? Because that way you build up your credit reserve so that when the next downturn occurs, you have room to borrow money to cover the difference. Because they will occur. What happened with this last tax cut and spending increase is alarming to a lot of people, and it's why you see the market starting to sag at this point, why you see a lot of questioning, and why you see the CEOs of major investment banks questioning what's going on. And that is, during a red-hot, flaming economy, while everything was churning along at a very nice speed and unemployment was down to as low a level as it could go without generating inflation, we, the people of the United States, through our representatives, chose to enact a tax cut and a dramatic increase in government spending at the same time. That's like saying when times are really, really good and you've just gotten a bonus at work that doesn't normally come every year and you've just sold some stock or something, so you've just come into some money and you go out and run your credit card debts up big to live higher on the hog than you can afford to live on for a longer period of time. That is going to come back to bite you down the road in all probability. Very, very little chance it won't come back to bite you down the road. On the other hand, if your family's cramped and it's hurting your job performance because you don't have a car, you don't have a reliable car, and you need a bigger house or you need to put some expansion on the house, and you borrow money for a nicer house that can leave you in a position where you feel more relaxed, you have a home office you can work out of, and you have an automobile that can get you to and from where you need to go to make money, that kind of borrowing is good because it produces higher income in the future. Borrowing as we did, and we in the month of October, we borrowed $100 billion. The bill that passed, the tax cut bill that passed Congress, was estimated by the Congressional Budget Office and by the Office of Management and Budget to cost at least $1.5 trillion more than the tax bill that was the tax law that was in place before it. It wasn't revenue neutral. That $1.5 trillion, there's no plan to pay back. There's no indication that the way the tax cuts were imposed will produce higher tax revenues going into the future. We did have a slight bump up in personal income tax revenue, but nothing significant that even began to touch the additional deficit that we ran into. And those two things together have got a lot of professional investors worried. And they've got to be concerned. Something has got to be addressed down the road. From a practical perspective, what does it mean? It means at some point down the road, either we're going to have very substantial inflation. We're going to have stagflation, in effect. We're going to have a slowing economy with high inflation, with high interest rates. Or somebody is going to have the guts to come along and say, we cannot afford to do this, and we need to raise taxes. Of course, the answer that some people come up with is, why not just cut spending? Well, the answer to that one is very simple. To cut spending enough to make a difference, you either have to cut defense, Medicare, or Social Security. The three of those together dramatically exceed the total revenue of the United States government. If you cut everything out except those three items, you didn't pay federal employees, the FBI was turned loose, you didn't have the Border Patrol, you didn't have anything. Just Social Security, Medicare, and defense. We would still be running a significant deficit. So what's the answer if you've got to spend the money? The answer is earn more money. How do you earn more money? That's called raising taxes. Ironically, and this is one of the weird ironies, along with the tax cut came a tax increase, and it's called tariffs. The irony is that the tariffs don't actually generate that much money because they slow down economic activity dramatically, but it's strange counterbalance to borrowing and spending that's going on at the federal level. Now, what does this mean to you? By the way, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and the telephone number to call in here is 254-773-1400. And by the way, I think it's fascinating. I'm used to be a Republican. I'm no longer want to identify with being a Republican. I guess I'm an independent now. Because, among other things, the Republican Party I knew was a party of fiscal responsibility, not fiscal insanity. And it bothers me just a little bit. And it looks like we do have a call on 254-773-1400. So, caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
How you doing today?
I'm here. How are you?
If I was any better, I'd be you. That's for sure.
I just
had a couple of points. I've been listening to you, and I understand that you as a Republican, and you don't, if my understanding is that you don't fit that base no more, right?
Well, I wouldn't. The point is, I think I'm still a Republican. I think the Republicans have become something else. The people who call themselves Republicans have decided that running trillion-dollar debts in good times with no intent of paying the money back, they suddenly decided that was a good idea. Now, do you think that's a good idea?
Well, no. Let me tell you this. Okay, for every action, there's a reaction. If we do something in the past, it reflects on the future, correct? Would you agree with that?
I wouldn't say it reflects on, but I got you.
No, circumstances that come, right?
Right.
Okay, you brought up something about the car industry. I was in it for 20 years.
Right.
Ran a dealership, everything else. Mm-hmm. I just want to tell you something that I do not think that a car is a good investment, period.
Why?
At this point.
Why?
Reason being is because...
Do you have a car?
Oh, yeah, I got a car and everything else, but that's a necessity.
Well, that's an investment then.
The worst investment you can make is a washer, because once you buy it, it's not worth anything.
No, that's not true. That is absolutely not
true.
That's absolutely not true. Your washer, the value of the washing machine is the ability to get clean clothes without going to a laundromat. The value of the car is it's about...
Hold on. It takes 50 cents to go to a laundromat.
No, it doesn't. How many hours of time? With a man and woman both working.
Okay.
How many hours of time does it take
what
extra?
You're saying. And I'm not trying to argue with you, my brother. I promise you I'm not.
Okay.
I the principle of what you're saying, I believe. Okay? I do not believe that, and I'm telling you, look how much the industry has changed. We had the leaders that I believe in capitalism with everything I got. I'm telling you right now. But you had the leaders of the big three go to Washington, D.C. not too many years ago making for money.
No, not all three of them. Just two of them did.
Well, they all went, but Ford backed out. You're right, because they had a lot of money behind them.
And there's a reason for that. It's called the unions.
Exactly. Well, my point about this is look at from that time, from where they're at to where it is right now, if you went and bought, let's just say a Chevy truck,
right.
And I'm a Ford man.
Okay.
But if you went and
I drive a Chevy truck, by the way.
No, that's excellent. They're all good. I'm not criticizing one from the other. But if you go buy a Chevy truck from that point to now, look at the market increase, not because of anything else, is what they had involved themselves in. It had nothing to do with government control. It had a lot to do with regulations, but nothing.
When you
with
say
government
the market
control.
Increase, the market increase on what? On the stock?
On the value of a truck, because if you went and bought it, a $30,000 truck, now it's almost $50,000.
Oh yeah, I understand that, but that's a different. Okay, but you're buying
so
a different
what
truck today.
To a consumer. What happens to a consumer is their profit margin isn't what Okay, so let me tell you how big I'm sure you understand, but I'm talking to the listeners, not you. If you sit down at the table with the owner of a company or something, and you project, this is what we're going to make, you know, whatever it is, hypothetically, whatever. And you come in at the end of the day, and that margin of error is, like, way down. They, in their opinion, they lost money.
Wait a minute. The margin of error means you hit the number. You hit the number you promised. If you have a low margin
exactly.
of error.
Exactly.
If you have a,
they lost money.
No, they didn't lose money.
Because they wanted to exceed it.
No,
I've been there, brother. I'm telling you.
Okay, I got you.
Okay, and I'm not. I promise, I'm gonna try. I know you got short time, but I'm just saying, I don't agree with that. If the population, the only way that we can control is to invest in what we got right here. I agree with you 100%. I agree in good investments because it's a necessity that we have a truck, or let's get a horse or something. But I agree with that. But yeah, it's not an investment.
Yes, it is.
It's a liability because
it's an investment.
Worthless.
In and of itself, everything becomes worthless.
Yeah, in itself.
All corporations become worthless. Land becomes worthless.
Except for land.
No, land becomes worthless too.
Sir?
If you buy a piece, let's say you buy a duplex on a piece of property.
Right.
And you and the people who own the other duplexes in the neighborhood don't invest to keep those things in good condition and they deteriorate over time, what happens to the value?
Well, the duplex itself decreases. I said the land.
The land also goes down as I've seen this happen in many occasions, and it's happening
across
the United States. The
I
land goes
the
down in value too.
No,
but let me explain. But let me explain something.
Sorry,
if that duplex is well maintained and the other people maintain their duplex as well, and the cash flow on that duplex gradually rises over the years, then the value goes up, right?
Sure. Yeah,
okay, if I buy, and I did, a truck, and it's a high-quality truck,
right?
And I know because of my use, I need that truck to do what I do to make a living.
Sure.
And I retain that truck for 5 years or 10 years. You can keep it for 10 years now. That's amazing. That's a much higher quality vehicle than we used to have. It used to be 100,000 miles, and it was a piece of junk. Now 400,000 miles and they're still running. The issue is that over the time period, my truck, for example, although I have other uses for it that are very, very important and valuable to me, it gets me to and from work. Without the truck, I have no income.
Uh-huh.
So the value of
it's valuable to you.
That's the point of an investment. Every investment. It's not as simple as what
now,
you can sell it for at the tail end.
I humbly apologize because I misunderstood what you're saying.
No, it's not.
It's the investment to you.
It's
okay,
not that
I
it's going to be worth more money in the future. It's not. And
okay,
matter of fact, I've shown the people this again and again and again, and they have really gotten angry at me.
I appreciate your intelligence, man. That's awesome.
I've shown people that they buy a rental property. I got you, and I thank you for mentioning that. People buy a rental property. And particularly, I followed several of these in Killeen. They bought a house that somebody, they assumed a VA loan or something, and they bought this house, and they're making their principal and interest payment, and they rent it out, and over a period of time, and I've actually seen this happen over a 20-year period, and they finally sell the house at the end. And I show them they lost money.
Right.
They can't believe it.
No,
they have more dollars. And sure enough, if you add it all up and you count in the taxes and you count in the maintenance they had to do on it and you do everything and you figure it all up, that single family dwelling that they didn't fix up, they just bought it as is and then started renting it out, and it gradually deteriorated over time. When they went to sell it 10 or 20 years later, after we factor in inflation and all the expenses that went into it, they lost money. And they're always I use their numbers and I show it to them. Now they perceive that they're making money because they see the value of the house going up, but they also having to feed that house every year in the way of maintenance and replacing the roof and cleaning it up when people move out, and eating the occasional vacant period when they're having to fix it up again. And they think they're making money hand over fist, and their dollar value gradually goes up. Matter of fact, I was a piece of ranch land here in Central Texas that the people were really, really proud of the fact that their grandfather had purchased it and how much he purchased it for. and we went and they, how much they wound up selling it for, and they were really, really, really proud of that. And of course, they paid, because of the fact they held it for a long period of time, they paid a pretty good-sized chunk of capital gains tax on the sale. So I showed them, here's how much he paid for it. Here's what he paid in property taxes over the years, assuming he had to do nothing else but pay property taxes. And that didn't count the fencing and everything else he did. And here's what you sold it for net of taxes. The rate of appreciation on that property was 2.5%, but inflation was 3.5% over the same period. You lost money.
Correct.
And
no, I'll tell you this because I got to go, but I'll tell you this, brother. I appreciate you. I enjoy your show, and I'll leave it like this. I think a good deal is just a frame of mind. That's all there is to
well,
it, in my opinion.
In some way, in some cases,
people get people in debt because of their hijinks. They're wanting more.
Yeah.
So
trying to raise your standard.
It's about discipline and everything. I agree with you on all them counters.
Now you said something. You said something about me not being a Republican anymore. Raising your standard of living.
I'm sorry.
I'm not a Republican. It's really very simple. Raising your standard of living by borrowing money that you don't know how you're going to pay back is fiscal irresponsibility. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, I agree with that.
That's
I'm a
what
Republican, and I don't
that's what
that.
Congress just did, and the president signed off on.
Well, brother, let me tell you, because what I said at the very beginning of our conversation, that's because of perception of reality. We had leaders in the past that has come up and pursued different things and did things that shouldn't have done, passed bills and did stuff. Now that's just kind of like us just living your life at your house. If you overextend and you're looking at, just like you said with Christmas, if you go out and you do a credit card and you overspend your credit, that
with no way of paying it off over the next year.
Said shortly is you live for the moment, you have a good feeling in your heart, but then all of a sudden, when you come around February and everything hits you, you're kind of like, what do I do now?
And this is I've been asking a question. And I want some Republican to answer. How can you call yourself a Republican if you support borrowing money that there's no way to pay back just to increase the standard, to make people feel good for a little while?
To have a plan?
I mean, what I'm saying, the Republican Party officially, but there is no plan.
Hold on. There is a plan.
There
and
is?
The plan I don't want to get so deep in politics that it gets into a frustration, because I really appreciate you.
There's a plan?
There is a plan, and the plan is to reduce. We spend more in Afghanistan on infrastructure than we do in our own USA. That bridges. Well, hold on. Yes, we do, sir.
No. How much did we spend on infrastructure in Afghanistan last year?
I can't tell you off cuff, and I wouldn't want to exaggerate it. So
we paid a pittance.
Sir?
We paid a pittance, and we paid next to nothing, and we spent about $1 trillion on infrastructure in the United States last year.
Okay, how much did we spend? I just said Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Now, hold up. Now, I'm talking about all over the world.
We pay a pittance. You could cut off foreign aid for infrastructure that the United States spend, and it would have no effect on the deficit. It's so tiny.
Would you pay a bully to leave you alone?
Would I pay a bully to leave me alone? It all depends on how big a gun the bully had.
Just depending on how big the bully is, right?
Well,
okay, that's an honest answer, and I appreciate it. But here's my argument with you.
I pay the government to leave me alone.
When somebody stands up and says that we're stronger, we're better, and we're mightier, and we refuse to send all this money across the seas when we can spend it right here.
We don't send much money across the seas.
Hold up, Bubba. They do.
No.
They do.
No.
You know, the reason why this is cutting back so much, the reason why the wages are going up, this is why all the unemployment is going down, is because we're cutting back on, and I do believe in the tariffs, and I know, you know what, I will have to pay for stuff, but it's our responsibility, the one to put the man into the office, is to support him. And if we say that we're going to pay $50,000 for a truck that's only worth $20,000, that's not economy. That's stupidity. So then we have a decision to make. Do we buy more used cars? We had one guy come out and cut our feet out from under us and took all away the cars, the old cars, because he believed in the environment and all that, which is fine, but it just happened. So here you go.
I'm going to have to disagree. I'm going to have to disagree with you. I don't know anybody who ordered cars be seized by the government.
You know what's beautiful about this whole conversation, sir, is that we can agree to disagree.
Sure.
And I will continue to listen to you continuously.
Okay, well, thank you.
I appreciate some of the points you make.
All right, well, thank you for calling, and I appreciate what you did if you were running a car dealership and helping to stimulate the economy and put people to work in Detroit. And thank you very much, and you have a good day and a good weekend, okay?
You too, sir.
Okay, bye-bye.
God bless.
And we got a break for commercials. You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff McClure on KTEM 1400 AM. Possibly on www.ktemnews.com. And we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth. And I'm back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff McClure. Jake isn't with us today, and Lord willing, he will be with us next week. And if today is November 17th, 2018, where you are, you're certainly welcome to give us a call in here at 254-773-1400. You know, we've been talking about debt, and it's kind of beat that thing to death. We basically have an unsustainable debt at the governmental level right now, and it's growing. It's projected by the Treasury to grow at $1 trillion this year. And looks like it may actually wind up being higher than $1 trillion. And the reason that it's their projections, by the way, when they did this last year, when they passed the tax bill, were that interest rates would remain effectively zero forever, which isn't working out. So it looks like it's going to be closer to $1.2 trillion. We have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yes, Jake, I enjoy your show.
It's Jeff, by the way.
Oh, it is Jeff?
Yeah.
Oh, Jake is not there today.
Right. We take turns confusing people.
Oh, that's great. Well, I was totally confused. If you give me about a minute, I'll tell you what I think about what you were saying here, and then I'll hang up and you can tell me if I'm wrong. You were talking about buying a car or a truck
mm-hmm.
or a washing machine or whatever.
Well, not a washing machine. Washing machine is a little different issue, but let's go ahead.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and go with a car. A car is absolutely a necessity.
Right.
I agree with everything that you just said. The only thing about buying a car is, as soon as you drive it off the lot, you've lost 30%.
And I mentioned, by the way, that ideally you can wait a year and buy a one-year-old car, and that's probably the most efficient way to do it. But buying a new car is not necessarily a bad deal either.
Absolutely, absolutely. But my point is, seriously, you can go to any dealership, and I just bought a couple of new trucks the other day for my company, and go in there. I got 30% off, bought the trucks.
Mm-hmm.
That's an excellent investment.
Did you pay cash? Did you pay
cash?
Pardon me, sir? Did you pay cash or did you borrow the money?
Oh, absolutely not.
Good.
Not when I get 1.9% interest.
You're a brilliant man. No wonder you're successful. You've been in business a long time.
About 35 years.
Yeah, me too.
But anyway, that's how you want to buy a truck.
Right.
So you've made an excellent investment. If you pay the sticker price on it, you've made a not-so-good investment.
That's true.
If you were to wreck the damn thing and total it out, and if you don't have gap insurance, you're going to find yourself owing, the lender on that vehicle probably about another $8,000 or $10,000 because the insurance company is only going to pay what the value of the vehicle is depreciated out.
I completely agree with you.
So that way, when you buy a vehicle, always get your gap insurance. So
either get the gap insurance or buy it at a price. You know, this is how I know if I'm paying the right thing. I'm a member of USAA, and I call them and say, I'm looking at this vehicle right here. What will you loan me on it?
Right.
And I don't necessarily take the full loan, but the issue is if they will loan me more on that vehicle than the people are asking for it, it's a good deal.
Yeah, that's true. But I firmly believe, when you buy a vehicle, you want to get the best damn deal.
Yes.
The reason why people don't get good deals is because they're impulsive.
Right.
They're not willing to wait them out. I go in there and I tell them, this is what I want to pay for it. You know, if you want to sell me the trucks for that price, then we got a deal. Otherwise, don't call me back.
But you've got an advantage over the regular consumer. You're not making a one-time purchase. You're buying three trucks. And if they give you a good deal, you'll probably come back again.
Right. And I'm going to need more down the road.
Right.
But anyway, my point's simple. You know, if you get 30% off the vehicle, you've made a great deal, and you're happy, and you're good to go, and you're making money, and, you know, you can go to church on Sunday with it if you want to. As far as a washing machine, that's definitely, to me, a necessity, because I'll be damned if I'm going to go down and spend time and waste money in a damn laundromat.
You said something very accurate. You said waste time. The guy said that a washing machine wasn't – the last guy said a washing machine wasn't a good investment. Yeah, it is a great investment.
It's excellent. It's an excellent
And you investment. Want to get a good washing machine, by the way. You don't want it breaking down on you.
There you go. And how many times do you use your microwave every damn day? That's
you got that.
Well. You know? So there's a lot of good investments, and the key thing is to buy everything right. Not to screw anybody, but to buy it right.
Right.
But anyway, my last point is you said that you're not a Republican anymore. I've been a Republican since I was 12 years old because I remember when I used to go out and mow yards as a kid, and I had this guy had a sign in his yard, and it was for JFK. I'm 72 years old. I'm semi-retired, but I'm still running my company right now. And the point is that I took the sign out of the yard to mow the grass, and the guy said, what are you doing moving my damn sign? I said, well, I got to move it so I can mow the grass. So anyway, he said to me, he says, well, you know, that man right there, he's the best man there is. And I said, well, if I were old enough, I'd vote for Nixon. And he looked at me and he said, why the hell would you vote for Nixon? I said, because I'm going to make 50 cents mowing your damn yard. And if I vote for Nixon, I'm going to keep 40 cents of it. If I vote for Kennedy, I'm only going to get to keep maybe 20 cents of what I'm going to make on this yard.
Do you want to hear an interesting irony to that?
Yeah.
John F. Kennedy cut income taxes.
Yeah, I know that.
He went to Congress and said, cut taxes.
Right, right. But you got to remember something. I was only 12 years old.
Yeah, I got you.
I was not as smart as I am not right now. Not that I'm any smarter than most people are. But the point I'm getting at is, the Republicans do a lot of things that upset me. They upset you. That the deficit is horrendous. But look at it. If you don't vote for Republicans and you want the crowd that's going to come in here and ruin this country, like Pelosi and all these people, I mean, my God.
Now, I look at the individual. I didn't say I was a Democrat.
No, you did not. You did not.
I'm an independent now, because what I do is I go through and look at the positions, and I spend a lot of time doing that, and I know a lot of people don't do that. I look at the positions of the people who are running for the office and said, what are your positions? You know, I went and researched their published positions on what they're going to do, what they would vote for and what they wouldn't vote for. And if they are in office already, it's really cool because you can see what they voted for. Now, if they've been in office before, you can see what they did when they were in office before. I very carefully researched that out, and as a result, it's a very complex process for me to vote. I can't vote one party or the other. I have to go down through there very carefully. For instance, the judges, the railroad commissioners, some people from each party routinely in these positions like railroad commissioner or judge run who are profoundly unqualified for the job. And they run, and sometimes they get elected because people don't research. They just look at the numbers and they just look at the names and vote. So what it used to be, there was a time, and I will hark back to Ronald Reagan. There was a time when I felt very confident that by voting Republican, I was making a statement to ally myself with a party whose philosophy I agreed with. If the position of the Republican Party is running up unsustainable debt to make us feel good in the short term, if that's the attitude that the United, which is going to be ultimately horrifically destructive to this nation, they might as well be the Democrats.
Yeah.
And, you know, when somebody and the leadership in Congress right now, integrity is a big thing to me. The same people who are in the Republican leadership who were willing to shut down the United States government because the debt was too high, to make a point. Cranked the national debt up by probably closer to $2.25 now, trillion dollars. To increase, and they, believe me, staffers and members of Congress admitted this over and over again, to increase the probability of their getting a good, of retaining the Senate or growing their majority in the Senate at the midterm elections. And it worked.
Yeah. Well, now, it's just like all these people we vote for here in Bell County, you know, all these bond elections, you know. Look, I'm originally from Dallas. I just moved down here 3 years ago. I built me a house down here on my land down here in Bell County. And, you know, I go up to Dallas a couple of times a week to keep things running up there. That's where my business is, actually. I've been a general contractor for 35 years. But, you know, where we're going in this country is absurd. The morality is gone. I mean, what we're teaching our kids.
And what
these councilmen people are doing is, they're spending all this money. Oh, it's for the kids. Bull crap. It's not for the kids.
I don't know where your councilmen are, but I think local government in the Central Texas has done an amazingly good job. There are exceptions. Yeah, there are exceptions here and there. But by and large, one of the reasons, for instance, here in Salado, where I live in Salado, we have a very high-quality growing community. It's growing at a very sustainable rate. The quality of people that we're getting in there is better and better, and frankly, the driving force behind that is the school district. And in Killeen, they have made some tremendous investments in schools, and the investments they made in schools in Killeen is what gradually has weaned the Killeen community area, the greater Killeen area, off of total dependence on the federal government at Fort Hood.
Okay, you know what? I'm going to agree with you, but I've only been here 3 years. I'm still trying to learn the issues around here. But I tell you what, you live in Dallas like I lived there for 45 years. My wife and I have been married for 49 years since we got out of college. And I guarantee you one thing, it's so corrupt. Dallas is so liberal. They built a football stadium in Allen, which is just north of Dallas, Richardson, Plano, Allen. They spent over $40 million on this. They had this bond election. Do you know they have yet to play a game in that?
What is it, stadium? High school?
Yeah, it's high school.
Well, that's absurd.
You
hit absurd. You know what else is absurd? Every study that's been out that's ever looked at it, you build a professional stadium in a city, and you get a bond election, and you get the taxpayers to pay for it, and it does not increase economic input in the city one penny.
That's exactly what I was just going to say. It doesn't help anybody other than raise the taxes on my properties that I've got up there. And it just, I mean, it's ridiculous. The stadium was done 3 years
ago.
Well,
you and I are in complete agreement.
You know,
we're running out of time, though.
We are. We're running out of time. And, look, I really appreciate your time, and I enjoyed listening to you, and you have a wonderful a holiday, okay?
Okay, thank you. By the way, thanks for calling. This is the Personal Wealth Coach. I just wanted to bring up something that kind of went by. Bitcoin has dropped below $6,000. Now, that means that in about a year, Bitcoin is down 60%. Whenever you hear somebody say some commodity or some something, whether it be gold or silver or Bitcoin, and you are listening and they say, "This you ought to buy this because it's going to go through the stratosphere, it's going to make lots and lots of money," in my opinion, you should shut off whatever channel that advertisement's playing on. Be really picky about what you listen to there, because there's something false being advertised there. Anytime somebody says you can get wealth without risk, there is no such thing. There's market risk to everything else. And we, unfortunately, are running out of time. We've been talking about debt. We've been talking about your debt and the government's debt. We didn't ever get around to equity, which is my favorite subject. We did touch on what's going on in the markets and the economy. This has been the Personal Wealth Coach, and the Personal Wealth Coach does a couple of things. Number one, we have this radio program. Secondly, we manage investments and investment portfolios and do financial planning for people and service for people with net worth, with an invested net worth typically of $1 million or more. And if you'd like to contact us off the either about the radio show and you wanted to tell us you'd love to talk about something, you can give us a call. We have voicemail on the weekend and live people during the week who answer the phone directly. We don't have a phone tree. It's 254-947-1111. That's 254-947-1111 or 800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. Or you can contact either Jeff or Jake at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. And we really encourage you to send us comments about the show, good, bad, or indifferent, because we do pay attention. And the reason I've been hammering on dead here is because I've gotten several messages and telephone calls saying we need to talk about this more, so people can understand this interaction between debt and the economy and tariffs. And certainly contact us. And if you need some help financially and you have a large portfolio, as I like to say, now that you've made it, will you be able to keep it? That's the key. We'd be more than happy to help you with that. And we'll be back next week with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. Hopefully Jake will be back here with us and we'll be able to talk some more about the economy. Give us some fodder to talk about in between either Jeff or Jake at tpwc.com. So do you want me to stop at 10 seconds? Okay. Until next week, this has been the Personal Wealth Coach.